south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You longtime listeners probably remember me talking about a guy named Brandon who came down to one of my earlier Expat Insider seminars. He's the guy that decided not to fly or even drive down. He took his boat and even went through the Panama Canal. Remember that adventure? I spoke about it on a show probably 3 or 4 years ago. Anyway, after the seminar, he ended up in Nicaragua, where he put that boat into use as a charter, a business, he said, that started making money right away. Since then, I've been getting a lot of emails and inquiries from people asking about coming down on a boat or buying a boat down here or building a boat down here and living on it full time. You know, what's it like? How do you go about it? What's it cost to dock, rent a slip, stay in a marina? What are the facilities like for boaters here in Latin America? Can you do it first or even second class, or do you have to rough it? Are there pirates? All kinds of inner queries. Well, I thought it was about time to hit on that very viable subject, since I ran into a guy about maybe a month and a half ago who's living down here in Central America on his sailboat exclusively. Well, he spends most of the time in Central America anyway, some of the time in the Caribbean, but he prefers, get this, the storm and hurricane protected area in Guatemala called Rio Dulce. And why would he pick a place like that so far off the Gringo tourist trail and practically unknown to boaters, at least first world boaters? Well, that's what we're going to get into. Of course, lots of people up in the States, especially in the Keys, Florida, etc., like to live on their boats. But if you're going to do it up in the States, it ain't cheap. Meanwhile, this guy, Sailboat Phil, I call him, is living the absolute life of Riley, first world all the way, on what he says is only $600 or less a month. I thought, man, I had to hear this guy's story, so I pumped him. How did it all start? How did he get to living on a boat full-time, coming down in 2010 and never really going back to the States? Starting from Florida, heading through the Caribbean, then down Central America, even South America? Well, you know, it originally wasn't his life's plan, except in 2008 he was completely wiped out in that U.S. real estate bust. Then he got divorced. Financial blowouts will do that to you. So instead of getting addicted to opioids, though he did have a short love affair with Johnny Walker Black and mood elevators for manic depression, he took stock of what was left of his life and decided to revert to his old college dream. That was to sail around the world for the rest of his life. But like he said, you can't do that forever. Instead, you pick your favorite ports of call and kind of make them your regular stopping points. And man, I'll tell you, that lifestyle really suited this guy. He was full of excitement, had a certain glow in his eyes when he talked about it. And he said, Johnny, don't you think that's wild? Wouldn't you like to do that yourself? And I said, well, no, not really. Go around the world, yes, but not live the rest of my life in a sailboat. But to each his own, and I can see by the way you're talking about it, it was a real good move for you. And it's true, you hear a lot of people say pretty much the same thing, especially young adults without a family or a lot of responsibility. Almost always ends up being a pipe dream, but not for this guy, not for Sailboat Phil. Now, he said to me, he got completely wiped out. Well, you know, for a multimillionaire, being completely wiped out means he had around, he said, $40,000 or $50,000 available to him. Not exactly poverty, but, you know, nothing you could live on the rest of your life. Anyway, the kind of sailboat he wanted was around a 40-footer and a new one well over $100,000. But, as he told me, every time there's a hurricane in the States, anything that hits Florida, Louisiana, whatever, like for example, Katrina, well, that means periodically a gigantic load of salvaged boats, a lot of decent ones, hit the market at the same time. So he ended up buying a very nice 40-foot sailboat with a small diesel in it, you know, when there's no wind, for about $15,000, and he had to put another $5,000 into it because it wasn't really wrecked, it was just waterlogged, was submerged for a while. So now he's got $20,000 into the thing. It's around 2010. And I think he said the boat was built in 1989, so it was fairly recent for a boat anyway. Like he said, there's a lot of them out on the water that were built in the 40s and 50s and still doing fine. But then again, like he said, and he's been down here in Latin America a while now, it's the gringos that maintain those older boats. Latins, although they keep their boats afloat as long as they possibly can, too. A lot of them, like he said, would be considered death traps to us. And because unlike the States, there is no real Coast Guard inspections or anything like that, you see them everywhere. A million patches, tar, chicken wire, Bondo. Nothing you and I would ever want to take out more than a half mile from shore. But he did say that Latin sailors are fearless. Like he said, sometimes he'll be 20 or 30 miles from the nearest shoreline and he'll see a Latin guy fishing in a dinghy. He said they wave, stand up, and show me the biggest fish in their catch. They don't want me to tow them in or help them in any way. They just want to show me their catch. He did mention if you're going to do it his way, that is buy a nice boat and live on the water the rest of your life, or at least part of your life, there's a golden window of opportunity for you that's opened right now. Because of those big hurricanes that whipped through and wiped out Puerto Rico and so many other islands, now there's another opportunity to get a nice 35 to 45 footer, perfect for island hopping and such, for around 10 to 20 grand. Even better, he says, you can live a life completely off the grid. Turns out in 2010, when he started on his journey, you really couldn't do that, not 100%. But these days, 2017, 2018, you can get completely off the grid and still live the first world life and not suffer or sacrifice one bit for it. To elaborate, just in the last 3 or 4 years, solar electric companies have come up with some very inexpensive, easy to install, complete packages. Solar panels, lithium ion batteries, the latest kind, like they use in the Tesla Powerwall. That means you rarely have to pull into a marina or dock to hook up to an electric power source. Not only did Phil say he's almost completely self-sufficient, he's often got way more power than he can use. And the cool thing he says is that the new lithium-ion batteries take about half the space as old lead-acid batteries, and they weigh about half as much, too. And there are dozens of stores and websites and catalogs that sell very energy-efficient appliances like refrigerators, freezers, water heaters, even washing machines. All, of course, downsized for boats and RVs. And he said, you know, if you shop for that stuff in boating supply magazines and boating supply stores, you'll pay almost twice as much for the very same kind of stuff, maybe under a different brand and look, than you get from the camping, outdoor, and RV supply catalogs. Amazon's a great cheap resource to buy that stuff. And he loves this site, he says, called campingworld.com. So then how about when it's really cloudy and there's no wind? Well, he's got a small electric trolling motor that putts along, and that'll last him about a day with battery power. And even if it's cloudy, you get some electric power generation through the solar panels. But when it's raining, forget about it. So every so often, he does have to use his little diesel motor. But he said, just to show how energy efficient my rig is, I can go about 1,000 miles on 20 gallons of diesel fuel. These days, that's what, about 50 bucks? He said, out of about every 1,000 miles he travels, he gets about 950 miles from sail and solar and about 50 miles when all else fails with the diesel. So how much would it cost to outfit your rig like that? He says around $3,000. That's solar panels, energy efficient, fridge, freezer, battery storage, inverter, the works. And he said his only bill is his cell phone. Oh, and you're going to love this. He's a U.S. citizen, but he pays no taxes at all. Except, like he says, when he goes to shore and he has to buy supplies. And, of course, there's that long list of indecipherable taxes on that cell phone bill. So then, what about Wi-Fi and computer hookup? Well, he said he could buy a satellite link. That's pretty expensive. But every single marina and dock station throughout the Caribbean, South America, Central America, they have free Wi-Fi. That means even if you just anchor a little ways off of a marina, you'll pick up their Wi-Fi and you're in. Oh, and that's what he does most of the time at night. He pulls up to a marina or a dock, and in the Caribbean and Latin America, those are all kind of like gated, guarded communities. They're protected. Most have all first world creature comforts too, stores, restaurants, even swimming pools. And he said, during the day, they'll let you hook up for free because you're going to go to use the restaurant or the showers. Oh, did I mention showers? That's what he said. They're always free when you dock at a marina. Of course, like he said, you got one on your boat too, but it's nothing like a big expansive shower in a nice setup at a marina. Oh, and another thing, he says it's very cool that these days, since nobody wants to see the water polluted by garbage, plastic, whatever, almost every docking site and marina he's been to in the last year or so will pump his head. Hey, you know, it's not what you think, but that's what they call it, right? Yep, the head. Where'd they get that from? Anyway, you pull up to the pier and they'll pump it for nothing as a courtesy because they don't want to see you dump that stuff into a harbor or anywhere. So he says boaters, especially ones that have a nice sailboat and are first world types, automatically have a Gringo Advantage. They figure you're going to dock, spend some money, go to the restaurant, play tennis, use the pool, whatever, maybe even rent a room at their hotel. Most marinas these days have hotel space, by the way. And they treat you like you're part of the club. Well, you are part of the club, the Boaters Club. So then I asked him about his favorite places and the prices of marinas and such. Now we're talking about renting a boat slip and having the services of marina now. In his case, he says he likes to travel around. He's got a lot of favorite places, so he doesn't want to rent a slip by month or year. Besides, he said it would take a big gouge out of his budget, which is why he likes to anchor outside of a marina. No problem either. He says the marina people don't care because you're going to come in and use the facilities, as mentioned before. However, he said a lot of people who want to live on a boat come down with the idea they're going to rent marina space or a slip year-round or monthly. Then you'll have the hookups, the electric, water, sewage, the utilities. And he says they're always thinking about tourist destinations like the Bahamas, Virgin Islands, Costa Rica, Panama, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, or what used to be Puerto Rico. But he said, I don't want to shock you, but for my 40-footer, if I was to rent a slip in, let's say, Panama or Costa Rica, and a nice marina, it would cost me around $30 to $40 a foot per month. So figure it out. That's minimum $1,400 a month. Man, you could rent a decent house for that. Then he said, you have to give them a security deposit, just like you were renting a house, probably around $2,000. Now, of course, you're going to get water, electricity, trash removal, and security and all that. But he said, man, it's just not worth it. Then he said with a twinkle in his eyes, remember I said those are the tourist trail ports. But here's what the average boater doesn't know. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of beautiful little marinas up and down the Central and South American coast. Gated, guarded, nice, quiet, peaceful, some a bit rustic, and some with all the first world amenities. At a fraction, I'm talking about a tiny fraction of the prices you'll pay at a marina on the tourist trail. One of his very favorite places to dock is in the Rio Dulce area in Guatemala. You see, not only is it extremely inexpensive to stay there, it's fresh water and gives you complete hurricane protection during the season. Now, for those of you who don't know what the Rio Dulce area in Guatemala is, well, it's a 27-mile-long freshwater river coming off the mountains in central Guatemala, and it empties into the Caribbean. It's a very wide river in many spots, and it's so calm you can't even see it flowing. In some places, in fact, it's a half a mile wide. And because it offers such good protection during the hurricane season, there are little marinas dotted up and down all over it. In fact, when you check out some of these Rio Dulce marina websites, you'll find there's a statement there, a quote, that says, this is an insurance-certified storm safe zone. Self-explanatory, right? Now, another Expat Files listener, Robert, who's also a boater, made it a point to personally investigate a number of those marinas in the Rio Dulce area. Why? Because he's got a 44-foot boat and wants to live the life of Riley here in Latin America, too. He wrote back telling me the prices and the amenities at one called Amatiki Bay. And he gave me a price range for some of the other little marinas in the area. Let me just excerpt this for you so you can get an idea of the differences between a nice little upscale marina in Guatemala on Rio Dulce versus Costa Rica, Panama, Bahamas, whatever. Now remember, at those locations, you'd pay $35 to $40 per linear foot per month. Well, here's the breakdown if you're in a marina off the tourist trail, particularly in Rio Dulce. So Robert says after checking it out, $5.50 per foot per month. Seems to be the standard rate for a nice marina with pool and restaurants. My boat, he says, a 44-footer, would only be around $242 a month at one of the bigger marinas. Though I know several smaller marinas with no pool or restaurant that would only charge me roughly $130 a month for my 44-footer. But they'd be in equally good locations under and around the main bridge in Rio Dulce. Then he says, in that particular area, there are lots of marina. They're located on both sides of the bridge, all an easy walk to the local village with shopping and local fruit markets and such. By the way, it's been said that's the largest bridge in all of Central America. So believe me, you can't miss it. We stayed at Mar Marine for a month at their hotel, so we're familiar with them. All right, I mentioned that Rio Dulce is 27 miles long. As far as the marinas, they're not way upstream. Most of the nice ones where you see the European and Canadian yachts and such are just a couple of miles from the Caribbean. Oh, and because there are lots of Canadians and Europeans with pretty good sized boats, that means most harbor masters will speak a bit of English. So there you have it. If you like boating and you're thinking about living on a boat, it would be almost out of the question if you docked in a tourist area. It would be first world prices all the way. Think of it. The rates I quoted off the price list for that Costa Rican marina were 5 to 6 times the price of the marinas off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Now, don't think that because the prices are so damn cheap that the boats that are next to you will be half-assed pieces of junk manned by riffraff. Well, there's always some of that, just like up in the first world, but there are some very nice, very first-world yachts docked all year round at some of these marinas. You have to wonder, how do these high rollers with half-million, even million-dollar yachts find out about these places? Oh, I've been there too, and I've checked out a lot of these yachts. Get this, the majority of them are Spanish, European, or Canadian registry, so Americans really haven't much discovered these places yet. So if you're interested or even half interested in this, there's a really cool and free newsletter and website in English called RioDulceChisme.com. That's RioDulceChisme.com. RioDulceChisme.com. By the way, chisme is a slang word in Spanish meaning gossip. So translated, the website means Rio Dulce Gossip. It's a great resource. For example, if you come down and know absolutely nothing about the area, the people, the resources, the mechanics, the amenities, where to go, who to know, man, this little local newsletter has everything. What a network. Once again, in the interest of complete disclosure, I've got nothing to do with this newsletter. I don't know anybody who's putting it out, and I don't make a cent off it, but I've seen it, and it's really cool. In fact, Phil, you know, the boater living off the grid, he told me that it's one of the best little boating resources he's seen for any marina area in Latin America. Oh, and speaking of off-the-grid boater Phil, he told me his very favorite places to dock lately are in none other than Cuba. Not that they have a lot of amenities, he says they don't, but since Cuba's known as a country where people want to escape on boats, not arrive, as a first world visitor, if you're not going to a real busy port like Havana, you might find yourself in a nice cozy little marina, a run-down cozy little marina, where you'll have the gringo advantage in spades. Most likely, you'll be one of a tiny handful of first world boat owners docked there in a maze of dilapidated fishing junks. Sailboat Phil says if you want to know what it was like to dock in a harbor 50 years ago, sail your boat to the backside of Cuba, the non-touristy side. Quaint but poor little fishing villages, barefoot kids, 6 or 7 cars in the town, not a franchise or a restaurant to be found. It really is a cool kind of Hemingway-esque experience. And since you're such an unusual sight to them, oftentimes you pull into a choice spot, tie up your boat, and there's no one there to collect a fee at all. And when you take off for a while, you go to town, there's always a handful of smiling young kids there ready to watch your boat or sleep on it for $1 a day. In fact, he said he's left his boat in the care of one or two of those kids for days, and when he returns, he sees it's been cleaned and spit-shined. Literally, spit-shined, he says. And man, are they proud to be working for a gringo, even if it's just for an afternoon. So he says he really likes the sleepy little towns in Cuba, but on the tourist trail, like in Varadero or Havana, forget it. It's first world prices all the way, and they really gouge you. Oh, and he said, no internet at all in those little towns and barrios either. Meaning if you can't do without, you're going to pay a ton of money for a satellite connection. So he says for the last 6 or 7 years, he's been kind of like a sailboat nomad. He has a nice list of 25 or 30 different places that he has as possible stop-off points that he really likes. On that list are lots of small port towns on the lesser-known Caribbean islands too. However, during the hurricane season, that would be August, September, October, it's always one of the marinas in Rio Dulce, Guatemala for him. However, he does warn against a couple of places too, like for example, Jamaica, Rio de Janeiro, any port town in Venezuela, you could have figured that. But especially, he says, Jamaica. Now, they've got some really nice marinas there. Not nearly as expensive as Costa Rica, Panama, Cayman Islands, Florida Keys, etc. However, you don't want to anchor your boat or leave it unattended for any length of time at all. You definitely want to get into a marina and rent a slip because you will get robbed. All right, what about food and groceries? Well, as you might imagine, his diet consists of a lot of fish and seafood. And he knows what's available, what's running, what's in season, like amberjack, robalo, crabs, and langosta. That's lobster. And being a single guy in a boat, he's always got way too much seafood to eat. Of course, he's got a freezer on board. That's a must. In fact, he said, check out campingworld.com and you'll see there's a lot of good RV stuff that's equally adaptable to a boat, but less expensive. Oh, and about dry dock rates here in Latin America especially. After all, you might store it on land if you're only going to use it part of the year. I've got a short list here sent by Robert again, who's actually stayed in Rio Dulce with his boat. He says for one particular marina, Nanahuana Marina, I like that, Nanahuana, the haul-out rates for your boats on to land at the marina is $9 a foot. That means if you've got a 40-footer, it's $36. Meanwhile, on the Gringo Tourist Trail, Costa Rica, Panama, Cancun, you'll be paying three or four times that. And he says dry storage on land at a marina in Rio Dulce, again in Guatemala, is $5 a foot on land, plus whatever electricity you use. They'll have it metered. Again, at all these marinas, Wi-Fi, water, and sewage pumping are free, even if you just happen to pull in for an hour or two. All right, I'm going to stop right there for a second. I know this is a little off track, but I'm looking at the RioDulceChisme.com website. You know, that's the boaters' website I was talking about for that little string of marinas up that 27-mile river. And there's something here right now on the main page, the top article, that should give you a pause for concern. Remember, I've mentioned many times I don't recommend Belize to actually live there. Nice place to visit. However, here's a story that really reinforces that opinion. It's dated December 6, 2017. It shows a picture of a muscular, good-looking gringo who's kind of gone native a little bit, kind of jack-of-all-trades, live-on-your-boat type. Well, the article reports that the guy just died. It says, the Rio Dulce community has just lost another wild and crazy, beloved gringo character. We are sad to report that Guy Smith has succumbed to injuries suffered in a boating accident while in Belize. Now, I have to mention that Rio Dulce, where it empties out on the Caribbean coast, is only about 15 miles from Belize. I mean, a lot of people make the trek back and forth by small boat from that point, the little town of Livingston, which is the farthest outpost closest to Belize. That's where you might remember John McAvey escaped from Belize to Guatemala. He landed at Livingston, right on Rio Dulce. Anyway, since Belize is so accessible by boat, a lot of people pop back and forth from Livingston, Guatemala to Belize. And your first stop by boat to Belize is a place called Punta Gorda. Been there a couple times. Meaning in English, fat point, like that. So according to this article, this muscular, rough and tough gringo guy died in a boating accident on the Belize side. The article states, he and his 19-year-old son were in their dinghy when a larger vessel from a Belize restaurant called Coco King collided with them. Guy was knocked unconscious, suffered some broken ribs, and a brain hemorrhage. Guy was taken to a clinic on Cape Calker, Belize, then transported to a hospital in Belize City. He remained there for several days before he was able to be medevaced back to Canada. It was determined that his brain damage was too extensive to undergo surgery, and he was taken off life support. He died peacefully. Then it says his son was treated for lesser injuries and then transported to Mexico where he received further treatments. Do you get it? Belize did not have the facilities to thoroughly treat neither the father nor the son. They airlifted the dad to Canada and the son to Mexico. So tell me, all you Belize expat gonna-bees and wannabes, is that where you want to be, in a country where you can't get advanced first world medical treatment? Especially since, you know, most expats are not in their 20s or 30s. You know, that point in your life when you're invincible and don't think at all about healthcare. Most expats and gringos are pushing 50, 60, even 70. That's when good healthcare and medicine start popping up on the scope, right? I mean, really, you want to talk about lack of first world modern medical services? Both of them, father and son, had to get shipped out of the country. Oh, but that's not to say the doctors in Belize aren't good at cuts, bruises, broken bones and such. Routine stuff, no problem there. Worse yet, others have commented, I'm talking about American first world medical professionals, that if he'd have had first world treatment right away from day one, he might still be here with us. Still telling, as one gringo who knew him said, his tall tales and bad jokes. Remember, he was in a Belize hospital in a coma for several days before they airlifted him to Canada. All right, so just remember that next time you say to your friends and relatives, hey, I'm getting out of the U.S. and I think I'm going to Belize because, hell, my Spanish sucks and they speak English there. How wonderful. All right, so I'm looking at another marina that they're highlighting here, one that's just been remodeled and restored called Monkey Bay Marina. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, you'll see some really cool pictures of the place. Let me give you some of their rates. It's not by the lineal foot here, but by the width of the boat. It says if your boat is 18 foot wide or less, $220 a month. And if your hull is 18 feet to 25 feet wide, $325 a month. Nope, Gilligan's Minnow wouldn't qualify. That would be a bona fide yacht. Over 25 feet wide? Now you're talking about a cruiser. $450 a month. Oh, and then it says if you have a mono hull, which is normal, as opposed to a catamaran, if it's over 55 feet long, $400 a month. Remember, you get water, electrical hookup, all the amenities. By the way, you think those prices are ridiculously low? Listen to this. Other services. We will clean the inside and outside of your boat for $5 an hour. And on and on. You can look it up yourself at monkeybaymarina.com, just like it sounds. Remember, I'm not endorsing any one of these particular marinas. I'm just trying to paint a picture for all you gonna-bes and wannabes who are thinking about coming down and living on a boat. Oh, and you can buy a piece of land in Latin American marinas, too, where you get your own boat slip and your own piece of frontage. Man, that's a great deal, too. If you're watching this on YouTube now, you'll see one of those ads and you won't believe how cheap the monthly payment is. Cheaper than renting a slip. Oh, and one last thing about this off-the-grid guy, Sailboat Phil. He tells me how it's really kind of sad the amount of human damage he's seeing in the seas. Plastic bags everywhere, coral reefs damaged, even dead. All kind of floating, well, human garbage. He said it's bad enough in the Caribbean, but it doesn't get any better when you go south of Panama. As you round the corner, Colombia, Venezuela, etc., down to Brazil, seems like he said the more south you go, the less the people are concerned about living in their own filth. That's why he says he avoids big port cities at all costs. That's where the real pollution is. It's a shame how big cities and small dump their sewage right into the ocean. The only saving grace is that smaller towns means smaller amounts of garbage. Now, I hate to end the show on a sour note, but wouldn't you know it, every time gringos get together, they end up talking about such things. I mean, it's in your face, right? It's a fact. Pollution's exacerbated by overpopulation. Then you'll get the right-to-lifers and the pro-abortion people taking sides. Endless arguments and neither side will win. However, there's one thing everyone agrees on. The more ignorant a population, the more fertile they seem to be.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.